Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I have Diane McKendrick with me, and Diane is the CEO of Overachievers Anonymous. Okay, so you've already gone, okay, I can relate to this, I'm sure. And she has turned a conscious couch potato into a lifeaholic. That's a great term. There's going to be more retrospective interview and conversation about that, I am sure. Meaning she is a recovering overachiever and now has relaxed into her role as founder of Those Two Sisters, working with her older sister, Michelle Ann, who is an ex-police officer and turned tree-hugging hippie, and making income and impact and relaxing together with her older sister, Michelle, as a life coach for business women, supporting them to cut the crap and do the things to be women they are born to be. Diane does this by publishing her books. Her fourth one is due out in January 2025. Her podcast, nearly 200 episodes, and running retreats designed specifically for businesswomen to create the space to attune to the voice of their whispers, overcome the voice of their wounding, and that meaning negative self-chatter, and take action to live a fulfilled and abundant life. So you can understand why I asked Diane to be on this podcast, can't you? Because so much of that just absolutely resonates with everything I do on a daily basis. Welcome, Diane. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Janine. I'm so excited to be here to chat to you this lovely morning and, yeah, speak to all your listeners and followers and hopefully be able to add some value and gold nuggets.
I love gold nuggets. A lifeaholic, I have to say, that's a great term. What inspired, or where did that term come from?
The lifeaholic, I think, came from my older sister, Michelle Ann, used it first, and I just thought it was a normal word. I'd never, until people started saying, when we added it into our intro, so many people say, oh my gosh, I love that word. And it's come about because, you know, most of us will be aware of the term alcoholic when you're addicted to something. And we were talking one day and it's like, well, if you're not addicted to alcohol, or like I used to be, which I can tell you a little bit later, or if you're not addicted to the hardcore stuff that sort of sends your life in one way, what if, and then we were talking about what we do, what if you're addicted to your life? What if you were waking up every morning excited and having impulses and habits that really lit you up and switched you on, and you could be addicted to that? And so it sort of stuck, the lifeaholic, addicted to life, loving life.
I love it. And I mean, it's something that I can really connect with, because it is part of that. I mean, and the thing I sort of think around this diet is that, why wouldn't you love the things you're doing? You know, that whatever you do, whatever's out there, whether you're turning up and going to a mundane job or you're out in nature walking, whatever you're doing, why would you go and do it with the mental space of, this is crap, I don't want to do it, and to bring all that into your body and your sense? Why not go, okay, this is a great job, I'm going to meet all these customers as they come through each day, this is going to be fun. When I get bad service somewhere or someone grumpy, I'm thinking, why would you choose that?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think for me, many years I didn't realize it. I was choosing a job. I was choosing a path that I fell into, and that society, I guess the culture and society and the unspoken way people led me into. So I was working in the corporate world, and I was one of those grumpy people. I was 20 kilos overweight. I was really frustrated. I was driving an hour and a half to work and an hour and a half home from work to do a job that I got because, you know, the what I had learned is you go to uni, which I didn't, but you go to uni, you get a job. And so I did, traveled instead of went to uni, and then I went and got a job. It wasn't in alignment with what I wanted. I was doing center management and I started as the receptionist, and I built my way up to become a center manager and then portfolio manager of several centers. And I was good at my job and I enjoyed it, but it didn't fill my soul. And I was always the meat in the sandwich. I had the landlord breathing down my neck, more money, more money, more money. I had the retailers who all loved me because I was too nice for the job, pretty much. I was trying to look after them. And I always just felt all this enormous amount of pressure. And to combat that, I was going home in the evenings, drinking a lot of alcohol, eating a lot of crap food. I was eating dairy and wheat, which I don't eat much of now, so I feel so much better. But yeah, I really was not addicted to life. I was addicted to the things in my life that made me feel like rubbish. But the challenging part is I didn't understand that. I didn't know it. I just knew that I felt tired. I knew that, like, so tired, in fact, like driving home from work, sometimes I'd have to stop and have a sleep on the side of the road or eat an apple to keep me awake.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. And so, yeah, to hear you say that, like where I am now, I barely remember that except for when I share story. But why did I choose that? Because I didn't know any better.
And I didn't see or know. That is the thing, isn't it? No, knowing better, or knowing that there is a choice. That's I think that's probably one of the greatest realizations that I've had throughout my life, is knowing that there is a choice. And sometimes, you know, it's not always the best choice that you do. Talking about alcohol, I went out to dinner last night with a couple of my husband's birthday friend's birthday, you know, so it's quite a few drinks, but that's it's being aware. And I don't know whether you still do this at all, but sometimes I seem like I'm on the outside looking in and going, oh, is that a good choice? Is that, which way am I going here? And will I do that? And even what comes out of my mouth, or how I think about myself, or, you know, yeah, it's all to do with those choices.
It certainly is. And I understand when you say, or in your words, you said just watching yourself. So becoming the observer. And so I do the same thing now. And I just ask myself, is that in alignment with my values? Is that important to me? How's that going to make me feel? Health is one of my highest values. So if it's not going to add to my health, I often won't do it. But prior to having this experience, being around other ladies like you, other ladies who are happy and well in life, yeah, I did not know. Now I do. So now I choose differently.
And fortunately, you know, getting out of a job that you didn't like, which, and as it's not just you didn't like, but as you said, it was not in align with your values. I know someone that is close to me that's doing a very similar job at the moment, and working with the owners are all family business, and they're really nice to work for, which is probably a different situation. And she loves it because it just fits with her and her lifestyle and who she is. But then it's in line with her. But as you were saying, yours was not in line with your values, because you're being pushed from one side, having to harass the what do you call it? The shop owners. The retailers. So, and that's such an important aspect, isn't it? It's so there's two things. You know, if you need, we need to be working and a lot of us need to be working in a job, but finding ways to build that job around so it is in alignment. It's one thing when you step into your own business, you're sort of doing that anyway, you hope, but to find how you can align that in a, when you're working for the
for
man.
Someone else.
So is there ways that you help people figure that out?
Yeah, so what I heard you say was, I was working in a job. It just wasn't my thing. When Michelle and I, my older sister, were trying to get really clear on what we actually did over the last few years, because we've been in business about 5 years now, there was phase that we went through where we help women find their thing. And so when I was in the corporate job, I didn't know what my thing was. Like, I can sit here and say it wasn't in alignment with my values. But that woman that was going to that job didn't even know what values were. She was very externally driven. She knew, well, what I thought, and this is what my first book is about. It's called Rise Up, The Soulful Guide to Success. So as a young teenager, I was the fastest swimmer in Australia for my age. Like, I won a gold medal at the national titles. Mm-hmm. So what that taught me was push, sacrifice, strive, work harder, do more, stay later, get there earlier, eat better, do push. And so that's what I took in. That was my value, because that's what I learned. It's not what lit me up inside, but it's what won me gold medals. It's what got me the corner office. It's what got me a massive wage. It's what got me promotions. So I learned very, very early on that that was success. And so I kept doing it until one day I realized that success is not about the gold medal or the promotion. Success is about the way that you feel every single morning when you wake up, to understand and realize that you have the choice to choose what, where you go and what you do, who you spend your time with, what you put in your mouth, how you choose to move your body. That's like so much freedom in that. I also learned that it wasn't, and particularly as a woman, I'm 44 now, so I'm older. I don't have to be an athlete. I'm not a national athlete anymore. I'm a mother. I have two children. So I learned this the hard way, that motherhood called for something softer, something more like a slower pace. So I couldn't push and sacrifice and strive like I used to, because it led me to burnout. I got to a point where I was so burnt out, I could barely get out of bed in the morning. So for those ladies that might still be in a corporate role or a job that's not really setting their soul on fire, just even simply a conversation around it to understand, like, oh, okay, well, this physically may not be my thing or the path for me, but what within that experience and the job that you're going to, what are the bits you love about it? What really lights you up? So for me, I always loved, and it's carried on through my business life, I always loved people. So even when I was in the depths of darkness in my job, I got a lot of peace and I got a lot of connection and I got a lot of clarity around caring for people, whether that be the retailers or the owners, because I wouldn't judge them. They just had a very different set of values and they sometimes kind of clashed, and I was in the middle of that. So yeah, if you do find yourself in that position, what is it that you can love about your day? And if you start to do more of it, be aware of it, and two, do more of it, then things will adjust and change and morph so you can be doing more of that. To the point now, fast forward a couple of years into my life, I'm the CEO of my own business. I've written 4 books. I've got 200 podcasts. I've got 2 kids. I run retreats where people travel from all over the world to come to my retreats. And those retreats started in the backyard. Couldn't afford it. I didn't have the money to run retreats. I bought a Lotus Bell tent, put a tent in my backyard, shoved some people in it, charged some money. It cost me a fortune at first. But when I saw women land back in their body and find their thing, like locate their thing, get clear on what was important to them, what was lighting them up, it became a must. I was like, I have to find a way to keep doing this. So I did. And now we're 23 or 24 retreats in. We sell out pretty much every single time in advance. The next one's in March. So it's filling up quite quickly. And yeah, I get to wake up every single morning with doing what I love with people that I love. And I just want everybody to know, no matter where you are in your journey, because I would have heard someone talk like this several years ago and just think, oh, actually, to be honest, what I did think was like, this lady's on drugs, or it's all right for her because she's smarter than me, or she's got more money than me, or she's X, Y, Z. That's right. That's her. That's not me. Mm-hmm. And when I kept surrounding myself with women who had done really well in life and business, I was like, started to question and go, well, why not me? If she can do it, instead of being intimidated by her, what if I was inspired by her? You know, she's got a sparkle in her eye. She looks and carries herself into a room differently than most people. What if I was inspired by that instead of scared or comparing from it? And that's when things really started to change, when I made the choice to be inspired instead of intimidated by other women within the industry.
That is a really good point, because that's something, you know, as a strong woman who really does know where they go and what they want to do and what they want to achieve, and I use the one word want as opposed to need a lot, it frightens a lot of other people, and they're really challenged by that. And I noticed that. I was a GM sales for a multi-million dollar company for 20 years. And it certainly challenged people that I was in my own comfortable space. And that it became, and this can be a challenge for women who are finding their way and finding their strength and finding that connection with themselves, is other people won't like it. Because you moved out of the box that someone's put you in, or that you've put yourself in, or their version of you. And if you don't conform to how society says that you must conform, then, yeah, we're going to make life maybe a little bit difficult for you.
Yeah, that
you're nodding to all of that, Diane.
That is such a good point. And like I said, sometimes I forget now because I'm on the other side of it, but there's always new levels of it. Mm-hmm. So it pops up every now and again. What I notice is it's scary to stand out because what happens is you become a target for people.
Yeah.
And what you can do with that is a lot. But the way that I got through it is that I understood that when someone is triggered or activated by me or my success, or likewise me activated or triggered by or intimidated by somebody else's success, it's because there's a gap there for me. It's like, I understand that if that's making me feel a certain way, I can either choose to criticize, condemn, and not be very nice about it, or I can choose to cheer for that woman and support her and lift her up. But where that feeling comes from, and this is for anyone that may be, like, we're all human, we all experience it on some level, is like, if you're feeling activated or triggered by another woman, it's because she is reflecting your power to you. And it's so freaking scary. Yeah. And so we react in a certain way to protect ourselves from what's possible, because the million trillion part of your brain is trying to protect you. And if you stand out, like when you go back to our most primal, if you stand out from the crowd, you're outcast from your peers, you die, because they'll attack the one that's out there on its lonesome. So we are wired to stay part of the group. And my life changed when I started, like I've said before, started seeing and spending time with women that were giving me permission to step out of the group and saying, hey, you've got more to offer. Stop playing it small. Stop carrying on with all that. So to take the next step. And they gave me permission to do that. But that started with a trigger. That started with an activation. That started with a feeling of like, this actually doesn't feel very good in my body. I don't like this feeling. I don't like her. I don't like what she's doing. And then when one of those ladies said to me, but what I'm saying to you right now, kind of felt a little bit awkward at first. And then I was like, oh, once again, I can choose. I can choose to keep carrying on and playing small and criticizing or condemning, or I can step forward and give myself permission to show up and do incredible things in the world, which also gives other women permission to step up and do those things and have that activation or that trigger or that feeling, narrative story about me and who I am and what I do. And just ask yourself, it means more about her than me.
Yes, definitely. There's a whole lot in there to unpack. But it's very much like, so the trigger is what is the trigger? I suppose is to identify that in the first place. What is it about that person that you're confronted by? And again, where are you standing? Do you need to learn or just hold your own space? And I think that's the important part, is to learn how to hold your own space. And what I found over time, Diane, is being the real you. And I don't get a lot of criticism anymore now that I'm truly in my own space. I just had someone that emailed me, and for reasons within themselves, they're not able to continue working with me for just not in that space, ready for that yet. And I'll go back and give her the support that she needs. But the beautiful things that she says about me, it's lovely to hear them, but it's also just knowing that I'm there to support people. You know, it's knowing that. It's not
that,
having to have it reinforced all the time. And my love language is words of affirmation, by the way. But it's just that being able to give those words of affirmation to yourself and know that's who you are without being the whole, you know, look at me, I'm awesome. It's just that, just feel natural and confident and just be, I suppose. Just
it is, and it's one of the easiest things when you can locate that and be in that and completely accept yourself in any moment is where the freedom's at. And what I hear you talking about is, you know, that internal dialogue to yourself, which I break it up to the whisper. And when you're sharing that grounding and that centeredness and the way that you feel, that's your whisper, or what some people would call your intuition, or whatever you want to call it. There's a whisper coming in to support you to feel so centered and grounded and loved and peaceful and on purpose, or whatever it is that you value. And then what also happens, and this is a term that I've coined to build it into a framework to support myself to feel more centered and grounded more often, and then also teach it to my clients. It's, you've got that whisper coming through. A lot of ladies are too busy, too distracted. We're pinballing around life and frenetic to hear the whisper, which you offered up, like the whisper so beautifully in an example of that. And then the other part of that is the wounding. Like there's another voice in the head that is saying things like, oh, you're not good enough and you don't know how. And last time you tried it, it didn't work. Or you need that external validation to feel a certain way, or whatever it is. And it's really, for me, in my journey, being able to discern what's the whisper, what's the intuition, or you use the word knowing, what's my knowing and what's the wounding? Like what's the narrative of the story that's been built in there from childhood, from society that's, you know, making this a more painful journey or a more hard journey than it needs to be. And I think back in my corporate world, I was listening to my wounding because I just didn't know any better, all the reaction to life and what I'd learned. Whereas now, fast forward a couple of years, it's slow down, tune in, attune to the whisper, be guided by the whisper, notice the wounding, and don't try and get rid of it. Like a lot of personal development people and coaches are like, reframe it, get rid of that negative self-talk or what it chatter or whatever they want to call it. But for me in my journey, it's not about getting rid of it. It's about like this wounding or this chatter, this negative self-talk has actually got a lot to teach me. What if I could really attune to the whisper and hear my wounding and bring them together and have them work together to get me what I desire in life? And the moment that I made those two parts of myself or those two voices in my head, because let's face it, we've all got about 56 voices in our heads. Now I break it down into those main two. What if they work together and could be in harmony? What kind of a woman would I be then? How would it feel to be around me then? What kind of a coach would I be then? What kind of events am I going to, like, when I'm actually both sides and a real human being with all these feelings and thoughts and challenges, but just being able to have them integrate and go, oh, we're here for the same reason. We're here to keep you safe. I want to be, you know, successful and financially free to support my family and my community. And then the other part of me just wants to stay like small and little so I don't stand out and I don't get what happens when you stand out. So they actually want the same thing. Mm. So they're just going about it a very different way. So tuning to the whisper, integrating the wounding so they can work together to get you more of what your values are, what's important to you. And I found that it's been massive in my journey, like discerning between the whisper and the wounding and having them work together.
I love that terminology because it rather than negative thoughts, because it is wounding. It's wounding to the soul. It's wounding to you. And making sure that the whisper becomes louder than the wounding. That I think that, because a lot of people are hearing a lot more of, in your terminology, the wounding comments rather than the things that are whispering our good points or the points that support us a lot.
Yeah.
I know, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking, and I don't want to say I don't hear it, it's because we all do, but it's a matter of whether you choose to pay attention to it as well. But I think that, as you said, even as you've got older and more mature, you know, so I'm, you know, I've been on this planet for 60 and a half years. So you eventually go, oh, too bad, stuff it type of attitude, because it makes you, you know, think that, that's not 60 and a half, I'm 65. So there we go. It's getting that. I know I have a different attitude now than I did when I was even 50 or 40 or 30 or 20. It's very
so funny you're talking about this. I literally did a post today, I second guessed it, on aging. And it's what my fourth book is about. It's about women in business, seasons and cycles of life. And I love listening to older women and the wisdom.
Glad you're about to say elderly then. I'm glad you pulled yourself up on that time.
Oh, I love it. And that's why when I realized I had my interview podcast with you, I was like, oh, I can't wait to jump on and, you know, share this time and space with you, because there is there's a wisdom that comes with age, and we can't get it until you get to that age. Like, I can hear it from you, I can feel it from you, but I can't experience it until I go through it myself. So,
but you've also got to be open to growth along the way, because I know many, many people in the same age as me who consciously, unconsciously, criticism of themselves on a daily basis, and making judgment calls, and feeling very self-conscious on a daily basis. So it's that they haven't done the work. They just you know, they just have lived that space. So it's, you have to do the work as well.
Yes. We do. We all do. And I wonder sometimes, because I know what that means, because I do it, but yeah. I do wonder for the people that are listening, because I catch myself say that language all the time. What does it actually mean? Like, does that mean if someone's listening from as a beginner, what does doing the work mean to us?
And that's a really good question. And for each person, it's a little bit different. I know when I'm, you know, working with clients, one of the things I get them to do, and I mentioned this on the previous podcast, is that I get them to challenge themselves to do something that makes them uncomfortable every day. Now, that's the start of doing some work, is to get uncomfortable, because we can just be very, very comfortable. And then our, for those that listen regularly know that I don't call it a comfort zone, our confinement of anxiety continues to shrink down even further. And it's not until we go, this is out of my comfort zone. We had some dinner with some friends last night, and they're very much in that space, and that's fine. That's their lives and as they live it. But having to have a coffee each day done a certain way to a certain taste or something is really nice, but if it doesn't happen, does that matter?
Oh, gosh, I love this conversation. I was just about to ask you. It's like you read my mind. I was like, oh, what's an example of that? Because I'm taking notes as you chat as well. And then you gave the example of the coffee, because that is such a big thing for so many people. And I literally had this conversation, I think it was this morning or last night, with someone about the retreats. It was last night, we had friends over for dinner. And one of the biggest challenges about getting ladies to come on the retreat, because their soul is whispering, they get there, do what it takes. Their wounding is saying, I've even had people say this to me, can I get my coffee at this time with this amount of milk? So that example that you used is so perfect, because it's something that's so small that truly can dictate our whole day. And then our days equal, all our days together equal our life, from that one small shift and change in the morning from the coffee.
I love, thank you, universe, for pulling that together too, as well, for that example. But it's those little things. I remember many, many years ago, so we've been married 44 years, but you know, you don't do that easily. that's not necessarily the journey of any.
I love how you say that. I love it.
Marriage. And, you know, many years ago, I bought my husband a opportunity to change the way he thought about things and sent him up a mountain for a weekend. And I have to tell you a story on this about choices. But the afternoon that he was meant to go, had a problem with the car. Our son had borrowed it and there was a problem. So he's gone. She talks about the universe bringing things forward. This is not going to happen. And he decided to go to a Wreckers to see if they had this particular part. And he's gone to the Wreckers and the Wreckers gone, oh, no, mate, we don't have that. Anyway, he's walking out and he's going, yeah, not meant to go. And then the guy at the Wreckers has come out and said, I just remembered, we got one of those cars down the back. If you can go grab it off there, you can have it for free. So he's gone and got the part, put it on the car, and then drove off to the other side of Brisbane up a mountain. That's why I talk about going up mountain. They weren't allowed to shave. There was no tea and coffee. They had to sleep in bunks with a whole lot of other men. And it really, he went on Thursday, and I just was doing all this meditation of him being open to ideas and everything. And it wasn't until Saturday it clicked, and he then realized he'd sort of missed opportunity, but he needed those opportunity to take that long to click anyway, and then was able to open up and have a conversation and do things. And when I gifted this for Christmas, and it didn't happen till May, so you can imagine those 5 months. And yeah, it was the best thing he ever did, he said, and didn't. The days were really long. They would go to midnight, which is really makes it uncomfortable for him, and didn't arrive home until midnight on the Monday or Sunday, whatever it was. And it was just, I could, the energy smashed through the house on the arrival home. It needed work. But I don't know where I went with this, but it was the universe needing work. It just doesn't happen. You need work.
So the work, we're talking about the work and what that might look like, and then getting uncomfortable. And then you mentioned that your husband went away on our version of a retreat, a man's retreat, and it changed so much for him. So what I hear you say is there was probably a coach or somebody that led that group. And that community of people that had all committed to something similar, knowingly or unknowingly, because their wife gave it to them as a present.
Not as many brave wives as
but
I told her she'd then a divorce at the time.
Oh, yeah. And then this is the thing, right? Like changing your environment, breaking your pattern, getting a coach and community that all have similar ideas or values or not, but agree to meet and change and evolve and grow together is absolutely life altering. So when your husband come home, like how did he change? Like what was he like?
The following weekend, there was a bit of reunion thing between the men that had gone, and I'm trying to get the order of events. That weekend, the first weekend, he caught up with our sons again, who are in their early 20s, and he's hugging them. It was, whoa, this was not how he normally would do that. And then when we went to this reunion thing, he's meeting these men as we're all parked and walking in and hugging them, and this energy of, it was just like a realization, a joy I will swear, because when he came in the house that night with his energy, I just went, I sat bolt upright in bed because it was midnight, and I went, whoa, what was that? And I said, so how was it? And he said, I can't tell you anything about it, but it was fucking fantastic.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's so amazing.
Yeah. So, but what his biggest takeaway was realizing he didn't have to be his father.
Yeah, huge, hey.
And that's something, yeah. And
that is the work for people.
And that's what I imagine, you know, with the retreats you do and the work that I do as well, is that you don't have to be somebody else through that conditioning. You've got a choice to make choices to be you.
That is huge. And that is like the key to personal development and evolution and growth and healing that many people are looking for years and years and years. And it's inside of you. I don't have it as the coach. You have it. You, each single person listening to this, has their own key. And that's the way I love to coach. Co-creation of obviously my expertise and offerings and what I've got up, and it sounds like you're very similar, and supporting that person to be inspired, or everybody to be inspired rather than intimidated, to discern between the whisper and the wounding, like what's actually you and your knowing, and what's everything else. Then finding your community, like where are your people? Like we've just heard that example of your husband going away for a couple of days, and everything changing, bringing joy back to hugging his sons. Like that's what I think most people want, is to be able to feel. So many of us are numb, and we're living out usually our being the person we, our parents wanted us to be, or trying to be one of our parents, because that's what we've been taught, that's what we've been exposed to. But each and every single one of us have a unique essence, and it's so easily accessible to us, but through trauma and experiences, it's like we wear this veil. And when you can just like look outside the veil, open it and see how much love and joy and gratitude and liveliness is available to us right now in this moment, regardless of our past or what's happened to us or what we've done or what we haven't done, it's like such a liberating way to live.
Yes.
And that's how you become a lifeaholic.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean shitty things haven't happened, because shitty things have happened to all of us. Hard things have happened and will continue to happen to all of us. But like what you said right at the beginning is it's a choice.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, and but you also brought up another word in that I, you know, encourage people, is gratitude, is recognizing. And I think that's a great first step. Well, you know, when you ask, so what does it look like? What does doing the work look like? Then being grateful is a great, easy first step to start recognizing the things around you that you are grateful for. And I think I've mentioned this in so many podcast interviews. My office sits here, and it's a beautiful day in Queensland today. Sun's out. I sit here looking, the pool's there, and I've got all these birds flying past all the time. They're a little bit distracting because they're just enjoying themselves, and they'll be squawking and carrying on. And this is how I work in my office every day. It's just a joy, and I've got veggie gardens, and at the moment mulberry trees fall, and
so we went and picked mulberries yesterday.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah.
My husband makes great mulberry pies, so we collect.
I'm making mulberry jam.
Do you? Oh, okay.
It's, yeah.
That someone gave me the recipe for that the other day. I must have a look at that. He's got orders to make a mulberry pie for, and I know this will be coming out in December or something, but we're interviewing now in September, and it's for the grand final weekend with the Lions and our neighbours and sons and everything next weekend. So he's going to make a mulberry pie for that. But it's just, you know, to be grateful to be able to be here, to be grateful to be 65 years of age, because a lot of people do not make it to this point. And to be grateful to be healthy and well and not be on any medication at this age, and do, you know, every day just that energy of being grateful. It's, you start doing it, and once you start, you can't stop the list.
Yeah, and I feel like it gets deeper. Like I just started with words, lip service, I think they call it, because the coach had told me to be grateful. So I was like, I'm grateful for my bed, I'm grateful for the hair on my head, and it was all like really surface stuff, but it became a practice. And I mean, when I committed to it every single day, it got to a point now where when I'm mostly grateful, but when I practice it, I can feel goosebumps on my skin. I can sometimes get like a tear in my eye, because it's just like this swelling of your heart in deep gratitude for what already is, and all of it, not just the nice, fun, joyful things, but the challenging, painful, shitty things as well. Because without that contrast, we wouldn't know the difference. So yeah, then gratitude reaches a new level and a new depth of, oh, wow. I think, yeah, that's, yeah. It's so simple, but it's so powerful. And it's something personally I come back to, or don't come back to, but every day, every moment of every day, if you can take time to feel gratitude at that deep core level and let it expand and grow with us, it's really special. It doesn't cost anything. It doesn't take any time, because you've got to be starting with your time anyway. So
And I love it. And you heard that in my voice, is just, I get more excited when I start thinking of all the different components that are just simple. But bringing up the point of that, it's also the challenges to be grateful for those, because we wouldn't be who we are and where we are in this space and time if we hadn't had those challenges. But I'm very thankful. I prefer the challenges to come at me with the weight of a feather, not a brick or a truck, and pay attention to those challenges and think, okay, I got it, I'll keep moving on, thank you very much. But we are who we are because of everything we've experienced until this moment in time, and how we've responded to those experiences is the important factor.
I love that, how we've responded to the experience.
I know my mum passed away in 2013, and my sister and I had a very, very different experience of it. And I was very blessed. There's a story about being in church and seeing her as she's passing. The church was opposite the hospital, then over. It's a beautiful story. I won't go into it here right now, but whereas my sister was by her bedside, which is what she needed to be doing at the same time. But how she's dealt with it since then has been very different. And my younger sister, and she's had a heart attack since then. And the doctor said it was from a broken heart, which was really clever of the doctor to figure that out.
Yes.
But it was just dealing with different experiences, because you know, if I ask her, how are you? And it's fine. I'm fine. I'm coping. That's what's coming across, as opposed to, and there's a lot of things she has to cope with in her life that add to that level, but it's our response to it. And fine. Or your body takes it on. So then it takes on for that, for your health as well.
Yeah, the body keeps score, doesn't it? That was another huge lesson in my growth as well, like sharing that example about your sister and how her body possibly held on to that pain and grief, and that we have the ability, I didn't know this, to move pain and grief through our body. So yeah, we don't have to hold it and live it every single day, because it's a bit the same with fear. It has a home in your body. Like when we slow down and tune in, fear, grief, all those more challenging emotions, they live somewhere in each of our body. And once again, when I heard that, I'm thinking, oh, what's this crazy lady talking about? but my knowing was like, my wounding was like, what's this crazy lady talking about? That's a bit much for me. It's going a bit close. But my soul knew there was truth to it. My body knew there was truth to it. So I was like, oh, how can I connect deeper into my body to see where stuff lives in me? And when we do some of the work with the ladies that we do, it's like just a simple question of where does that live in your body can completely change people's outcome.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's important to realize that, isn't it? With my mum, there's moments where I feel like I've just got to light a candle. It's that sort of day. I need to be doing that and be thinking of her. And even, what are we now, 11 years down, and I win an award or do something that I'll think of calling. Obviously can't, but I do let her know what's going on. But it's that recognizing what, as you're saying, that it's somewhere in the body, that grief can still be there, but it doesn't have to take possession and doesn't have to cause any dis-ease in the body as well.
Yeah, it was a bit like when I was saying before about the whisper and the wounding working together. It's like the grief and the fear and the hardship is there for a reason. If it gets stuck and stagnant, that disease can manifest. If it can be working together and be seen, heard, and acknowledged, this is, I guess, in a snapshot, the work that we do, like you do it in your way, I do it in my way, to be able to notice and integrate those feelings and thoughts and emotions, so our body, like, so the body can process it and have it work together instead of all the other, all just whisper, because we are human, so we're duality, or all just wounding. It's very one-sided. It's like, how can they work together to be in harmony with each other? And then it's like, we have our moods and emotions and ups and downs, but there's more flow to it, or there's at least more, it just feels nicer instead of.
Yeah, it's the word acceptance too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just
acceptance and remembering, like remembering who we really are, which is, depending on your belief, but is spirit in a human body.
Yeah, I knew you were going to get in that way somewhere at all. And I just say, yeah, absolutely. We're, again, and those that listen to me regularly will know that I've often said this is my belief, is we are a spirit having a human experience, but we've chosen to be here for these lessons at this particular time. So if you don't like what you're getting, think about what your choice was then and what might be, and we'll come back right to the beginning of what we were talking about, the choices you're making now, because your choice to be here was to learn something in particular, because you didn't have to come and have a nasty revelation of a human experience that you did choose. So what are you choosing now to learn from that space?
Yeah, so you have to take ownership over it. I remember the first time I heard it, I was like, that's really confronting. That's really confronting, because you've got to take ownership over it and no one can change it but you.
And my quote today that's gone everywhere, it's about making choice, and it's about who's driving your bus. So,
oh my, this is so like synchronistic, because I did an Instagram story yesterday on the car, or maybe it was Saturday, on the car of your life, and who's driving it. Is it the wounding and the narrative and the seven-year-old that's up to guttering around and making a mess of it, which is most the case for most of us.
Yeah.
And sometimes me, especially in business, I'm like, oh, hold on, my seven-year-old's driving the car. That's why it's right now.
I get the visual straight away then.
Yeah, the higher self stepping into the car, or the compelling new identity, or the whisper, or the knowing driving the car. It's a lot easier ride, even like through the ups and downs. There's this depth and this support and awareness that if you choose to have your higher self in the seat of your car or your bus, as you said, like, whatever analogy you want to use, it's just like, oh, this is, it's the journey. You hear it all in the books, you hear it on all the shows. It's the journey. It's the music you get to listen to on the way. It's the people you get to hang out with. It's the highs and lows and ups and downs and everything between. It is the journey. It's not the destination.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a great spot. I say this to every time in every interview, that we could sit here and talk for hours. Because once we, you know, and obviously the guests that I have very connect with them as to who the stories, the information, it just all resonates and flows from there. And it just, there's so much more to share. But we do finish with three takeaways, Diane. What would you like people, out of everything we've talked about, for them to think of, to take away?
So the three takeaways that I think are most important, because there are so many beautiful ones in there, and I've written my own little list and notes on what you talked about as well. But collectively, I think together, the most important things are to be inspired, not intimidated, by people around you, and use the people that perhaps in the past you were intimidated by as a permission slip to go, oh, that's what's possible for me. So let's be inspired, not intimidated. The second one is discern between your what's a whisper and what that feels like and where it lives in your body, because it will also have a home. Often it's our heart or our tummy, depending on sort of how you represent things and feel things. Discern between what is a whisper and what is wounding. And we do a really powerful practice at the retreat and in our online course, the Aligned Woman Academy, on actually how to locate it and feel it in your body and where you hear it from, because they'll each have a different direction that they come from. It's happening all the time, but we just don't know how, or we haven't been shown how to tune into it. So discern between your whisper and wounding. And then revisiting the story of your husband going away on his retreat. The third one is get yourself a coach and a community that have got your back, that are going to give you the support that you need to step out, listen to your whispers, integrate your wounding, and do something that lights your soul on fire, because you are a spirit in a human body. And my belief is that we've come here, the spirit can't feel the highs and lows of emotion. So we're here in our human body, and the purpose of life is to feel. But so many of us numb ourselves through alcohol, through work, through chaos, through trauma, through drama. And let's stop numbing ourselves and start the process of healing and integration through gratitude. I'm an overachiever. I had to have four. So the fourth one was gratitude.
I love it. That's such an important one.
Deep gratitude from the very surface level to the bed that you lay in and the food that you get to eat, because some people don't have that. To, you know, you mentioned your age at 65 years old, but some people don't get there. To the water that we drink, to like the positive, perceived positive, and also the challenges, because they are the things that give us the contrast and who have made us who we are. So yeah, inspired, not intimidated, number one. Two, discern your whisper and your wounding. Three, get that coaching community that's going to give you the support and the love that you need for continued growth. And number four, deep gratitude, both sides, not just the perceived positive.
Yeah, I love it. It's fantastic. And they're great takeaways, but also the conversation's been terrific. I've really, really enjoyed having this conversation, Diane. It's been great. How can people get in touch with you?
Best place to contact me is through my website, www.those2sisters, and it's the number two, so those2sisters.com. Or if you want to come along for the journey, people love my Instagram because we share a little bit of business stuff, but it's mainly like who I am as a person and how I've got where I've got. And it's, you know, fun, interesting, entertaining, empowering, educational. And that's Instagram, Diane McKendrick. Or if you're a bit older, because apparently all the oldies are on Facebook now. The young ones on Instagram, yeah, Diane McKendrick, D-I-A-N-E, McKendrick, M-C-K-E-N-D-R-I-C-K. And I've recently just got active on LinkedIn too, because apparently that's where all the professionals are. And I'm like, well, that's me. I'll join there too.
I'm on all those spaces, but I teach how to set up profiles on LinkedIn, because that is definitely where all the professionals are.
It's the place to be now. And there's, I'm noticing there's definitely a rhythm to it.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge, expertise, conversation. I've absolutely loved it. Thanks, Diane.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Remember to, if you are listening on any of the channels, to comment, give us some feedback. Always love that. Or you can watch this if you can find it on Janine Vosper on YouTube, or go to janinevosper.com and book a strategy call if you've got any questions. And I know if I can't help you, I have a huge audience of people that I can share the information with who will be able to assist you to achieve the results that you want in your life and business. Have a fantastic week, day, month, wherever you may be in the world. Look forward to you joining us on the next time, on the next episode of the We Are Women podcast. And remember that you are awesome, and to practice gratitude. Bye-bye.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the five most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.